In 2009, Andry Rajoelina seized control of Madagascar and immediately canceled a massive land deal with South Korea's Daewoo Corporation. He was just 34. This wasn't just another coup. It was a perfect snapshot of our fractured world, where corporate deals rival state sovereignty, where youth movements topple governments overnight, and where traditional diplomacy arrives too late to matter. Welcome to what Parag Khanna calls our neo-medieval reality, where power no longer flows neatly through government channels, but splinters across corporations, cities, NGOs, and even celebrity activists. The old rulebook for running the world has been shredded. The question isn't whether we like this new chaos, it's whether we can learn to navigate it before climate disasters, pandemics, and conflicts overwhelm our outdated systems entirely. Today's world mirrors medieval Europe more than orderly nation-states. Power has fragmented dramatically. Cities now drive the global economy. Dubai partners with Hamburg, Shanghai with London, bypassing national governments entirely. These urban powerhouses function as modern city-states with more economic clout than many nations. Governments struggle with basic services. Private generators supply electricity in Lebanon. Private schools educate millions in India. Mobile companies provide banking across Africa that governments never could. Gazprom oligarchs control the Kremlin. Billionaires like Trump become heads of state. Philanthropists like Gates govern borderless empires. Half the world's 100 largest economic entities are corporations. Walmart's revenue exceeds Sweden's GDP. Religious loyalties strengthen as Islam spreads across Europe and Christianity reroots in Africa and underground Chinese churches. Diasporas wield growing influence, with over 100 countries offering external voting rights. This isn't collapse, it's transformation into something messier, more fluid, and potentially more dangerous. Managing today's fractured world requires mega diplomacy, mobilizing governments, corporations, and NGOs simultaneously to solve local problems. Unlike traditional state-to-state negotiations, mega diplomacy creates action-oriented networks across sectors. It operates on three principles: inclusivity, engaging everyone from activists to executives, decentralization, pushing decisions close to problems, and mutual accountability, building trust through transparent action rather than formal authority. The internet exemplifies this, governed not by bureaucracies but by ICANN, a small nonprofit sustained through corporate funding and distributed networks. Modern legitimacy comes from the diplomacy of the deed, proving effectiveness through results rather than credentials. Accountability now flows through strategic shame and public pressure, forces that historically ended slavery and child labor, amplified exponentially by social media. Generation Y, comprising most of the world's population, intuitively grasps this reality. Having never known pre-globalization, they move fluidly between public service, enterprise, and nonprofits, viewing diplomacy as distributed influence rather than hierarchy, making them natural practitioners of this collaborative approach. Globalization has empowered entrepreneurs, activists, and celebrities to deploy their own diplomatic strategies. George Soros operates as a stateless statesman, having given away nearly $10 billion through his Open Society Institute, funding anti-apartheid students, establishing Central European University, and supporting democratic revolutions worldwide. Celebrity diplomats wield emotional appeal that transcends bureaucracy. Hollywood raised as much for Haiti as any government. Madonna put Malawi on the map. Bono practices shuttle diplomacy while shaming executives about AIDS funding. Super NGOs like Oxfam deploy resources strategically, supplying radios to UN peacekeepers, buying pharmaceutical shares to influence vaccine policy, publishing climate reports that shape negotiations. Each September, the Clinton Global Initiative runs parallel to the UN General Assembly. While UN attendees struggle to recall their annual theme, Clinton's model delivers clear results, connecting the world's wealthiest with its poorest through practical initiatives. These new diplomats don't replace traditional channels, they bypass them entirely, often achieving more in weeks than governments accomplish in years. Border disputes remain humanity's greatest peace threat. Arbitrary post-colonial borders rarely fit the peoples they contain. Africa bears the worst scars. 15 of the world's 20 worst failed states are African, thanks to the 1884 Berlin Conference that carved the continent along latitude and longitude rather than natural boundaries. Sudan suffers three simultaneous civil wars. The Democratic Republic of Congo holds 67 million people across 200 ethnic groups with little shared identity. The 1916 Sykes-Picot Agreement divided Arabic-speaking nations between British and French control, disrupting unity once enjoyed under mighty caliphates. The solution lies, paradoxically, in both clearer borders and cross-border infrastructure that makes borders irrelevant. The Trans-Asian Railway Network exemplifies this, drawing lines that ultimately transcend them. Africa's hope lies in physical connectivity, with sub-Saharan borders becoming transboundary conservation parks under Make Safari, Not War. The European Union demonstrates this paradox. Nations merged economically only after separating politically. Sometimes, creating clearly defined states becomes the path to transcending borders altogether. The post-colonial world fragments into neo-medieval chaos as 21st-century colonialism, strong states, international agencies, NGOs, and companies fills voids left by failing states. Around 50 countries from Congo to Afghanistan exist as states in name only, responsible sovereignty, lending global resources to make local politics progressive. Afghanistan's National Solidarity Program succeeded by dispersing grants directly to 28,000 villages with transparent processes, supporting traditional governance handling 90% of legal claims, proof that the local is everything. Poor countries often have abundant people and resources but manage neither well. Success requires finding a niche. China became the world's factory. India, its back office. Russia, its gas station. Brazil, its farm. Vietnam emerged as a manufacturing powerhouse. Morocco as Africa's automotive hub. Most developing countries should aim to be the next best thing. Not the next Dubai, but perhaps the next Tunisia. Despite misconceptions, poor countries benefit substantially from free trade. The problem isn't unfair trade, but insufficient trade. China became Africa's top investor, doubling both aid and trade to $100 billion annually through its Belt and Road Initiative. The developing world desperately needs jobs, with 90% of economic growth coming from small and medium enterprises. Al Gore's 1992 Times Earth in the Balance should now be Earth out of balance. Environmental catastrophes loom. Indonesian rainforests fragmenting, the Nile reduced to silt, OPEC's oil wells depleting. We cannot negotiate with nature. The planet doesn't care about 2020 targets if energy consumption doubles by 2030. What matters are initiatives addressing electricity generation, heating, transportation, and deforestation. Environmental responsibility resonates personally, particularly with younger generations competing to reduce carbon footprints through campaigns like Meat Free Monday. The sustainability movement has evolved from 1960s green activism to today's truly global effort, blending NGO activism, corporate innovation, and emerging economies' participation. For the first time, the historically disenfranchised wield transformative tools, smartphones, social media, digital banking, revolutionary organizing platforms. From Latin American unions organizing digitally to Arab youth leveraging social media, from Asian tribal groups using blockchain for land rights to African farmers accessing global markets, a bottom-up awakening challenges out-of-touch institutions. The world isn't run by any single entity, but by all of us, working across borders to build a sustainable, just global order through the messy, necessary art of mega-diplomacy.